London dropped its dignity.
Yeah.
So has France and Germany.
Yeah.
All hands are dancing to a raggedy melody full of originality.
Sing it, though.
Hello and welcome to yesterday's Chip Paper, our fortnightly-ish podcast where we look at the strange and the bizarre and macabre stories that we find in historic newspapers. My name is Jim.
And I'm Violet. And we're a couple of amateur researchers based on opposite sides of the Atlantic. Jim is in New York and I am in London. And every couple of weeks or so, we get together to take a look at some stories that we found in historic newspaper archives.
This story is a kind of, for me, in looking through these old newspapers and doing this research, it's kind of a sort of holy grail in that it's something I very much happened across. I wasn't looking for it at all. And it's something in this case, it's something that I was vaguely conscious of, but it's a world that I really wasn't aware of to any great extent, and is an international craze filled with household names who now nobody remembers.
How strange.
So there's no Wikipedia pages for these people. One of them has a Wikipedia page, but the rest of them are just sort of around for 20 years and then nobody's ever spoken about them since. So I haven't given you any information about what this subject is.
I've
been kind of trying to make
I'm clinging to every tiny detail you're giving me, and I'm getting nothing.
But because there's so much reporting on this, but none of it is... very few people have written about it retrospectively.
There's no one kind of giving a kind of overall picture, I guess.
Yeah, I've kind of had to just start afresh with this. So I'll give you a bit of background.
Okay.
I was looking for something else in a newspaper, and an article caught my eye, and the article is in the Dundee Evening Telegraph on the 16th of December, 1886, which is in the British newspaper archive, and the headline was "The Fasting Craze." The article starts and it's about a guy named Dr. Tanner, an American doctor, and it says who was said to have made £25,000 by fasting 40 days has much to answer for.
What?
I was like, what? So this is 1886. Uh-huh. Scores of people have taken to the trade since the date of his feat in 1880, and the number increases. An English woman has signified her readiness to repeat the doctor's performance for a consideration. The new craze grows so common that a name must be found for it. One might call it nesteomania, literally fasting craze, a word which rings as learnedly as dipsomania, bibliomania, kleptomania, and morphiomania, in brackets, the most dreadful of them all, which is morphine addiction. The most curious instance of this new form of enterprise is the recent offer of a penniless, starving Englishwoman to starve for 6 weeks in public, and under a severer test than that to which Suchi is at present subject, provided she can make a little money by it. How literal a way of taking the wolf of poverty by the ears. So, two people jumped out from this article. There's Dr. Tanner and his 40-day fast in 1880, and this guy Suchi, who gets mentioned later, who was apparently undergoing a fast when this article was written, December 1886.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dr. Henry Tanner is the only person in this story who has a Wikipedia page. In 1880, he fasted for 42 days. No food, but with water, with carbonic acid in it.
Okay, so that's like the very limit of like survival, right?
Well. Let's not get carried away on page one of this story.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
So he did these 42 days, and no one believed him. So he was like... understandably annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But he's at the end of June 1880, he did it again. He did 40 days drinking water with carbonic acid.
What is carbonic acid exactly? Sounds like something that comes out of a car.
I'm going to say it's effervescent water, and I'm going to Google it after we record, and you're going to go back and edit that. That's how this works, I think. So he charged people to come and see him sit there and not eating.
Okay.
And then on the sixth day of his fast, the New York Times picked it up, and they had a daily report on how he was doing. So the 4th of July 1880, the headline was 6 Days Without Food, Progress of Tanner's Attempt to Last 40 Days.
Mm-hmm.
July 19th, 20 days in, the headline was Rolling Up the Weeks, Tanner Looks and Acts Better Than Ever, and then the subheader, Over 2 pounds of water taken into the system yesterday, monotonous work waiting for the doctor to die.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like that they're like, oh, fuck's sake, this is so boring.
Imagine if that was, every single day you had to go and report on whether this guy was, but it's just like, are you hungry? I'm quite hungry, yeah. Okay, I'll write that. August the 3rd, the headline was Tanner shows his temper. He got intensely annoyed by talking visitors. Well, I mean, imagine how hungry you're going to be after like 38 days.
After 38 people to ask you how hungry you are.
I'm hungry after 38 minutes. Anyway, so on the 8th of August, 1880, the front page of the New York Times, the long fast finished, a meal that amazed Dr. Tanner's attendants. Milk, watermelon, and half a pound of beefsteak. No disastrous effects of the mixture as yet. Closing moments of the 40 days fast. Its history briefly reviewed. And then on the 9th, the headline was, A Voracious Appetite, Dr. Tanner's Constant Demand for Food.
And that journalist got a new job.
Yeah, you can stop reporting on this now, it's done. So he did his 40 days and 40 nights, which obviously has a lot of the news articles interviewed members of the clergy about what this signified for people and things, because it was so tied to religion. Mm-hmm. It wasn't for Tanner, but they're obviously like, you know, reflects on it. So what Tanner had done with his fast that earned him £25,000 in 1880 money. And I think he started like a medical school with that money. So yeah, it wasn't a new phenomenon when he did it. I mean, people have been doing this since the 17th century. There were people who did it for religious reasons, and there were hermits and people like that, and people who sat on poles up in the air not eating to do religious penance. And there were people who were showmen, and they were in freak shows, and they were just very, very thin people who didn't eat, and that was kind of the show. And
what a show.
What Tanner did was he turned this into a craze. People caught onto this, and it just exploded. And the 1880s was this real sort of zenith of what they called it. They were called hunger artists. And that first article that we mentioned at the top, it had Dr. Tanner, who was like this, I guess, pioneer, I guess unwilling pioneer in hunger artistry. And then the other guy, whose name is Giovanni Succi. Now, Succi is the guy, apparently, that the Franz Kafka story Hunger Artist is based on. Yeah, so Tanner's exploits made it a sort of like a global craze in the 1880s, and Succi was really the sort of... the John Bon Jovi was the first person I could think of. He was the John Bon Jovi of hunger, yeah.
I think that's the first time anyone's ever said that sentence.
He said
no such thing as originality.
Whoa, living on some air. So Succi, he was a real showman, a real character, a real product of his time as well, I think. He was Milanese. Some newspaper reports, so I found newspaper reports in 1886 about him. Some said he was 45, some said he was 34.
Okay.
I found a medical report that said he was born in 1853, which doesn't make any sense, because in 1886 he would have been 33, and surely that's what he wanted to tell people, but whatever. I think...
Maybe he wanted the gravitas of the extra decade.
I think he lied a lot about his past, and he wanted to have those years to fit all of his nonsense in.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, this is intriguing.
He is, honestly... He's a character. he begins to appear in the English newspapers in the mid-1880s as a hunger artist.
Okay.
And it was... So he was already working. He was working in Italy. He was working in France. Mm-hmm. But there was a hunger artist, East Coast, West Coast beef in 1886 that really made Succi world famous. And so I mentioned earlier... that Succi told a lot of lies about his past.
Yeah.
The way that... So Succi's point through his career was that he was a trader in Africa when he was younger, spent years in Africa, and one day he was ill, malaria or something, and he couldn't eat. So he started, I can't remember if it's, he started eating or he started drinking the juice from a plant or a root. And he said that that sustained him for 14 days with no food. So his whole point was he had this magic liquor that would sustain him. And it wasn't a feat of endurance for him at all. He was showing that his magic liquid worked.
Yeah.
So I actually have a report here about that from the South Wales Echo on the 26th of August, 1886, that says, considerable interest has been aroused in the scientific world here by a gentleman named Giovanni Succi. He professes to have discovered a liquor, a small quantity of which will enable a man to fast for 30 days or even 2 months at a time. He has now voluntarily submitted himself to the surveillance of a committee of vigilance at Milan, some members of which will never leave him during the 30 days and nights of his fast. As a mere feat of endurance, it will not equal that performed by the famous Dr. Tanner, but the circumstances of the case make it far more interesting to the medical and scientific world, inasmuch as Signor Succi says that by the aid of his elixir, anyone can do likewise. He lately fasted 14 days under watch at Forli, and one of the most singular points to be observed is that although he lost weight, the flesh taking rather a mummified appearance and the skin a reddish-yellow tinge,
healthy,
while the pupils of his eyes are dilated, yet his muscular force does not seem to be diminished. So, in 1886, he's already done one 30-day fast in Milan.
Yeah. But, like, how much of this liquor was Succi drinking?
Not actually that much.
Okay.
He would have, I think, it's like 6 ounces of it at the start of the fast, and he would top up every couple of days or every week or something. So he wasn't just knocking it back.
Okay, I was going to say.
Yeah, because if this elixir was actually soup, then it's less impressive.
Was it soup? Was the plant a pot on the stove?
I'm just drinking this chicken. So he'd already done one fast in 1886 in Milan, and that, it didn't make him any money. And that is going to be a theme with Giovanni Succi. So he said he would repeat the feat, but do it in Paris.
Where you get real money for starving yourself, and then you become a runway model.
Where people, biting satire.
Sorry, I had to get that one in somewhere.
Also, Succi was 5'5", so I don't think he's getting higher.
Milan, though, you would have thought like he could have made some headway there, but you know.
Maybe Gap Kids. So he's done his 30 days, sustained by magic water, didn't make much money. The crowds in Milan weren't interested, even though during his fast he was out horse riding, exercising, and going on long walks.
But he looked like a mummy.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Is that a monster riding a horse? Yes, son, that is a monster riding a horse.
I was about to say, I'd pay to see that, and then I was like, what have I become?
I'd probably pay to never have to see it, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
So, another guy from Milan, for some reason was really, really pissed off about Succi doing this with his magic water. This other guy, Malatti, he said that this magic water was nonsense, and that Succi, like him, like Malatti, was just able to starve themselves for a while and be fine.
Well, relatively fine.
So Malatti claimed that he'd done fasts in the past, just not publicly, like just to show that he could do them or just to try it. He says. So yeah, the Litchfield Mercury, the 5th of November, 1886. The most intense interest has been excited in Paris by the announcement that the two fasting Italians will undergo the self-inflicted penances of long fasts in that city. So Malatti decided that he would do it at the same time as Succi in the same city.
They just have a fasting war.
Yeah. Malatti declares he has no desire of making money by his fast, but at the same time will receive the public in any numbers day by day. Malatti is to fast for 50 days.
Right.
And Succi for 30. Malatti will take nothing to sustain him beyond fresh filtered water, while Succi gives out that the secret of his fasting consists in a drink which he distilled from tropical plants and which is varied only with the use of mineral and ordinary water. Succi did not make as much money as he desired during his recent fast at Milan and hopes to make a large sum by repeating the experiment in Paris. This, I mean, that that sums up a huge part of Suchi's character. He seems to just have one idea.
Didn't work this time. Sure, it'll work somewhere else.
Yeah, maybe where they can't understand me.
They think this is some sort of performance art. But wait, they're both fasting in the same city. They're both fasting in Paris.
Yes.
Okay, unusual.
Which actually sounds like a romantic comedy I'd watch. In this respect, he is totally at variance with Malatti, who declares that he is fasting to show that some stomachs are naturally capable of enduring long fasts, and that he will, after concluding his self-imposed task, never try the experiment again. Both men will carry out their fasts under the strictest surveillance. So, 50 days, and Malatti is reported over and over again saying that he's only doing this because he thinks that Suchi's a fraud. He's so riled by Suchi for some reason.
But even if he's a fraud, that doesn't mean that someone can survive, like, 30% again more.
No, exactly, exactly.
Like, that's stupid logic.
It is stupid logic. You should have told him. So, Malatti's setting up his 50 days, which started on the 26th of October, 1886. And then Suchi, at the same time, is setting up his 30 days. The Pall Mall Gazette had an interview with him, and the interview has an illustration of him, and his moustache was luscious.
Okay, you're going to have to put this picture online.
Yeah, I've got it. I'm looking at it. I've been looking at it ever since I saw it, actually. So, our correspondent also sends us a short interview with Signor Suchi, who he describes as 34 years of age, which he wasn't, of medium stature, broad chest, hard features, keen eyes, pale cheeks, high forehead, and bushy black moustache with abundant curly hair. There's literally a picture of him next to that description.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
I have the strangest image in my head right now.
Well, and how have you been since your experiment in Milan? To which Suchi responded, in excellent health. I'm getting stouter and stouter every day. I'm now about my normal weight. My appetite is first class. Don't imagine that it is either out of pleasure or speculation that I'm going to renew my fast in Paris. That's not true. It's about money. I want the world to know that I am not a charlatan, that my liquor is destined to render the greatest service to humanity, and that my discovery will open a new path in science. How and when did you discover your wonderful elixir? And then he answered, it was during my travels in Africa some time ago. I was seized with fever. I could eat nothing. I tried all kinds of remedies, but in vain. Suddenly, by chance, I hit upon a certain sugary plant. I partook of it, and my fever disappeared. The extract enabled me to fast during the remainder of my journey. Thus, in Nubia, I lived 60 days on 60 grams, about 2 ounces of the liquor. I tried the experiment again in Cairo and succeeded. Already the report had spread that a marvellous liquid had been found by an Italian while in the desert. Right, he rambles. I think when you read this, you get the impression that this is a story he's told a million times. But yeah, he was a real, just a showman, you know. But also, you start to sort of get these inklings where you're like, hey, you just chewed a sugary plant in the jungle and suddenly you felt better. Well, what plants are in the jungle that you can just chew? And like, why is Malatti so annoyed at this guy saying he has this magic elixir? What could possibly annoy Malatti so much about that? Mm. But anyway, so he goes on. When he went back to Rome, so the Egyptians heard that an Italian had found this magic liquid, and he says the Egyptians had a superstitious opposition to extraordinary things, so he fled and went back to Italy. And when he arrived in Italy, they arrested him and threw him into a lunatic asylum.
Right.
Which was broadly true. He did spend time in asylums.
Yeah.
And then he said to the people in the asylum, oh, actually, no, it wasn't true. I was lying. I don't really have a magic liquid. So they let him go. And he made as if he was going to return to Africa. Instead, he went back to his village. And then that's when he started his fasting experiments. That's his story.
Okay.
And I can't refute that story, so I'm going to go with it. The interviewer closes with, what difference do you see between Malatti and yourself? And Suchi says, the object we aim at is by no means the same. Malatti wants to prove that he can remain 50 days without eating, but Malatti, like Tanner, is a person of exceptional constitution. I fully believe he can do what he proposes, but you could not. As regards myself, I contend that with my liquor, everybody can live without eating. You or anybody else can do as I do. So you see that Malatti and myself are not rivals in any way. We do not prove the same thing. Dr. Maréchal does not believe in my liquid. I shall be happy to prove him that it exists and it is efficacious. A committee of doctors will keep watch over me, and the experiment will be just as serious as that of Malati. I shall swallow 60 grams of my elixir on the eve of my fast, and from that moment everybody may come and see that I shall absorb nothing of any kind during the period fixed on.
How very clever.
Yeah, so he's made it so it's like, oh, no, that guy's just doing some kind of circus act. I'm science.
So what you really need, man, is another you who doesn't take the liquor, see what happens.
If he was actually...
There's no control.
No, there's no control. There's no control, because this is made up. So I'm not going to go through every day of Malassi's fast, because that would be incredibly tedious.
Okay.
But he, more than anybody else in this story, suffered.
Mm.
On the 8th of December, the Bristol Mercury reported that he had entered his 43rd day of the fast, but it wasn't thought possible that he would be able to survive the full 50. The Sunderland Daily Echo and Shipping Gazette on the 13th of December, so 5 days later, 2 days to go. Malati is in a state of utter prostration, yet he refuses to interrupt his fasting experiment in Paris. There seems now to be nothing left on his skull but skin and hair. His hands are skeletons. As for his body, his clothes hang upon it as if they had nothing to cover but bones. He nevertheless goes on lying on a sofa, while the public comes in crowds to gaze at him. His great idea now is the organisation of a grand banquet at which he will preside on the 50th day of his fast, Wednesday next. There are reports in various newspapers of him having really, really terrible nightmares. At one point he signed a waiver to absolve the doctors of any legal responsibility if he died. I mean, he was right on the line of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
To prove a point. Anyway, somehow, on the 16th of December, 1886, it was in the London Evening Standard, completion of Malati's fast. Malati successfully completed his fast at 6:30 this evening. His condition is stated by the physicians to be satisfactory, and he was able to retain a small quantity of a specially prepared wine administered to him to assist the stomach in receiving other nourishments. So, also, that news report was at 6:50 p.m. He started his fast at midnight, so I have no idea. Nobody was checking on these reporters. So, Malati had survived, had just about survived 50 days on only distilled water. Suchi, the St. James's Gazette on Monday the 13th of December 1886 reported, which was a few days after Malati completed his fast.
Mm-hmm.
One of our Paris correspondents writes, "I have just returned this afternoon from a visit to Malati, whose fast comes to a close on Wednesday. He proposes to reside at a banquet of 200 covers, which is to be given at the Grand Hotel, where Malati receives visitors at the rate of 2 francs a head every day. And though I do not say he will fail to accomplish this, he is in such a state of physical exhaustion and mental prostration that the success of his experiment will not have proved anything. What we want is a man who can not only go without food for a month, but show us how to do it without loss of power and without discomfort." In this, Malati has signally failed, for he lies upon a sofa, looking like a corpse, with the pallor of death upon his countenance, and raising himself with great difficulty upon his elbow to write his name upon the back of photographs of himself, which are on sale in the room. He has lost nearly 3 stones since he began his experiment, and as I have said, he looks more like a corpse than a living man. Suchi, this is brilliant, Suchi, who is to fast 30 days only, is very brisk and lively, walking out this afternoon to the races at Otui. I don't know how to pronounce that. He does not seem any the worse for having been without food for a fortnight, and looks as if, to use the expression which is in vogue among the criminal classes, he could do this little bit on his head. So, Malati may have lasted longer, but really Suchi won.
Mm.
Somehow.
And Suchi was always going to win. I bet, as well, when he finished his 30 days, he just kind of wandered over to where Malati was and was just like, "Oh, how's it going?" While he had, like, a pepperami or something.
Pepperami in the story. Oh, God, imagine being really hungry. I was trying to think
really of, like, the worst snack that someone could have.
Imagine pepperami on an empty stomach.
Oh.
Kill myself. So, as a side note, as this recurring theme that I mentioned earlier, the Paris fast didn't make Suchi any money either. He rented really expensive accommodation, and then somehow, as reported in the London Evening Standard on the 29th of December 1886, Suchi's fast is drawing to a close, and it will not have proved in any way a pecuniary success. The Milanese faster will indeed have lost money by it, for he took a large apartment and advertised himself extensively with the hope of attracting crowds of visitors who have not come. At the present moment, he finds himself at the rather ridiculous position of a fastor who is summoned before the Tribunal of Commerce by a purveyor of refreshments who claims 185 francs for wine, sandwiches, cakes, etc., furnished him between the 1st and 16th of December. Because he wanted to put a large buffet on for the visitors who didn't come. Suchi is ridiculous.
Why wouldn't people want to come watch me starve myself?
He has one idea. And I kind of admire him for sticking to his guns, but at the same time I'm like, come on, man. So then, after 1886, I'm sure if I could speak Italian, I would know much more about Giovanni Suchi, but I'm looking in English-speaking newspapers, and he disappears in 1886. There's one report in 1887, the 3rd of March 1887 from the Star. Mm-hmm. The two Italian fasting men, Suchi and Malatti, have reaped little profit from their late abstinence. Malatti has gone back to his painting and Suchi has returned to Italy. So I found nothing on the British Newspaper Archive, nothing on Wales Newspapers Online, nothing in Trove. I found a report on newspapers.com mm-hmm. in the Lebo Courier from Lebo, Kansas.
Okay.
On the 13th of July, 1888. Suchi, the fasting man, the Accademia Medico-Physica of Florence has just given a diploma to Signor Suchi on the occasion of his having completed his 30 days fast. Yeah. So he's still working.
Yeah.
He's now at this academy doing important work, actually. This is why I found him in medical studies. They did a lot of studies on what starvation does to people. There was particularly a doctor called Luigi Luciani. They worked together and they experimented on Suchi to see what happened to people when they were in extreme starvation.
Mm-hmm.
So although he's not reported on in the UK, he's still working. Apparently this year I found he did 5 public fasts in 1888. And that's in the Oxford Academic Social History of Medicine. But they weren't reported in the UK. I guess his stardom had waned slightly.
Yeah, they got bored of it after a while.
Until 1890.
Okay.
Suchi is back in the headlines.
What's he done?
He was booked by the Royal Aquarium in London.
Okay.
And something really, really, really wonderful that I found on the British Library website, not in a newspaper archive, was a flyer that says, Suchi will swim in the Royal Aquarium Annex on the 15th day of his fast, Thursday, December 31st at 4 p.m. And the British Library in the blurb of this flyer say, unfortunately, we do not know who or what Suchi was.
Oh, that's great.
How good is that? That it's amazing.
Yeah.
They had no idea who he was, but they're uploading these flyers. And that's why this story, I was really like, wow, this is a pretty cool.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So what he's doing this time is he's booked by the Royal Aquarium to do 40 days, which he does. He sails through it. The Morning Post on the 28th of April 1890 reported, the end of Suchi's fast. The extraordinary feat of abstaining from food for 40 days, which Signor Giovanni Suchi commenced on Monday the 17th, was brought to a termination on Saturday. At 4:45, when there were 6,000 or 7,000 spectators present, Suchi appeared on the central stage surrounded by medical men and the members of the press and medical committees who had been watching him night and day during the fast. So he's done 30 publicly in Milan, Florence, Paris, 40 in London.
Mm-hmm.
He's seen off Malatti. Malatti's gone. He'll never do another one. But then in July 1890, another rival turns up. And this one has more showmanship than Malatti.
Is he another Italian?
He's a Frenchman.
Okay.
But he manages to get booked. So this is 2 months after Suchi finishes his 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
The St. James's Gazette, 8th of July, 1890, 3 months after. Back at the Royal Aquarium, a guy called Alexander Jacques announces he's going to do 42 days.
That'd be so annoying.
I know.
Because it's not like you can just tack another two onto your 40.
Oh, sorry. In fact, that's not when he announced he was doing his 42 days. That was 17 days into his 42 days. So he started even closer to Suchi's 40 ending than I actually thought.
Okay.
So he does 42. Cheltenham Chronicle reports on the 9th of August, 1890. End of Jacques Fast. The attempt to fast for 42 days, which Alexander Jacques commenced at Westminster Aquarium on June the 21st, was brought to a successful conclusion on Saturday afternoon. It was not until rather more than an hour after the time that Jacques broke his fast with some fluid food, which he took on the central stage of the main building. So he's gone through 42 days.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so what can Suchi do now? You know,
43 days?
No, he went 45.
Ah, okay.
So he's been beaten by 2 days. So immediately, Suchi's like, no, sorry, I'm going to do 45. And I don't know why Suchi's really rising to this, because he's a star.
Yeah.
You know, and this guy's... So I guess Suchi's just... And I don't know what's happened to his magic liquid.
So he just did it on water.
Yeah,
like
basically.
Like Mileti.
So what is happening to Suchi's magic liquid? It sort of disappears from the story at this point.
Oh, so he's not even putting it down to that anymore.
It's not being talked about, and it will reappear in a really stupid way soon. So in the Manchester Courier and Lancashire General Advertiser, 4th of October 1890, headline, Rival Fasting Men.
Mm-hmm.
Jacques, the well-known fasting man, having read that Suchi is about to attempt the task of fasting 45 days, is willing to back himself against him for £500 to £1,000. The one that fasts the longer to receive the stakes. To take place at any town he likes to mention, New York for choice. If preferred, Suchi can fast first and Jacques will then try to beat him.
Okay.
So Jacques is just goading Suchi. And Suchi did turn that down. But he did go and
it's
do...
a stupid deal anyway, but yeah.
Yeah.
Like at the same time, okay, I can back that if that's what you want to do. But him going first and the other after is just stupid.
He got it the wrong way around. If you're challenging somebody, you're like, listen, I'll go first and you just try and beat me.
Yeah, true. I guess if they did it at the same time, one of them would end up dead.
And I think Suchi has the smarts for it not to be him.
Mm.
So Suchi then, Gloucester Journal, 27th of December 1890, Suchi concludes his 45 day fast. So Suchi concludes his 45 days fast at New York on Saturday night, where he was so weak he could scarcely move on his pillow. The exhibition has proved a financial failure. Suchi tottered across the stage and... After
well, at least he's got his health. Oh, wait.
No.
Shit.
Suchi tottered across the stage and after sinking onto a sofa and sipping a little cocoa, managed after half an hour's interval to say a few words. He declared that he had fasted solely... in the interests of science, which I would argue untrue. A banquet was given in his honor yesterday and he left in the evening for Boston. Then this weird arms race, which is all happening within a few months of each other. Suchi's done 40, Jacques's done 42, Suchi's done 45.
Uh-huh.
So Jacques announces,
what does Jacques announce
8th of August 1891 in the Era, Jacques' fast of 50 days now on.
But isn't that's the same amount of time as Mileti?
Yes.
And, like, neither of them are talking about this elixir anymore. And Suchi's already said that some people just have the constitution for it. So I don't really know what they're trying to prove now. Because if there's nothing in the elixir, then 50 days, Mileti's already done that.
Well, you're now... assuming a degree of logic on two men who starve themselves with money. Not even a lot of money. So Dundee Courier, 21st of September 1891, reported that Alexander Jacques completed his 50-day fast at Westminster Aquarium at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. So now Jacques has done 50. Jacques has equaled Mileti.
Mm-hmm.
Suchi has never got anywhere near this. 45 days nearly killed him. Nearly bankrupted him again. So... He can't.
Stop with the pauses. It's too much.
That's it. So that's it.
Okay.
So the Sporting Life on the 16th of December 1891 reported, Royal Aquarium, Suchi commences a 52-day fast. So he added two more days on.
But he nearly died at 45. That's a whole extra week.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's only two more days than Jacques, though. I think that's the thing. So there are reports that go through this. I don't think anybody really had any insight into how he was doing, because some reports are like, oh, they're quite happy. It's just his pulse is very low and his respiration's not great. But all in all, his doctors are happy. Right. And then the Morning Post on the 29th of January, 1892. He did all these over Christmas, which would be the worst time, I think. Maybe he just doesn't like Quality Street. The 52 days fast. Suchi, although he has already existed for 43 days without nourishment, has yet 9 more to go. His undertaking is successful. And so far, he has lost no less than 37 pounds, 6 ounces, which is nearly 3 stone, in weight. Although, according to the best authorities, the utmost a man can lose and yet continue to exist is a third of his original weight. And Suchi, with 9 days to go, is already within 12 pounds of that amount. In addition, he is suffering from a derangement of the biliary organs, which causes constant retching and general irritability of the stomach. So he's lying there, not having eaten for 43 days. He's constantly retching. He's got bile coming up his esophagus.
9 days to go.
9 days to go. Which is why it should come at no surprise that the Dundee Courier, on the 30th of January 1892, reported... Suchi, the Italian fasting man who attempted a 52 days fast, has broken down at the end of 43 days, 18 hours and 45 minutes. So for the first time, he'd failed. Oh. Which might explain...
Because he didn't have his elixir.
I think he probably did have his elixir. Oh, I think they've just stopped reporting on it because it's just kind of his thing.
It's just kind of his thing now, right?
Yeah.
The elixir doesn't work. What?
And that might explain this. St. James's Gazette, 30th of May, 1892. Suchi reported insane. Suchi, the well-known fasting man, is stated to have become insane in Paris. The other evening, the attention of the police was called to a well-dressed man who was apparently fencing with a phantom outside the Café Riche. On being taken to the police station, the man declared that he was Caesar Napoleon, Emperor of the French. He subsequently gave an address in the Rue Victor Massé, and on making inquiries there, the police discovered he was Suchi. Two Englishmen, who are said to have described themselves as apprentice fasting men, lodged in the same place. It is stated that Suchi had for some time past shown signs of mental derangement. On Friday morning, he went to the Elysee to try to see President Carnot and tell him that he was a usurper. Suchi is now in an asylum. So this is his second stay in an asylum. And then later in the year, and we're really seeing Suchi fall apart here, the Blackburn Standard on the 25th of June 1892... headline, Suchi in a new character. Suchi, the fasting man, writes as follows. It is a deplorable error that they placed me in an asylum in Paris, as they found on medical examination that I was quite sane and gave me my liberty. My experience in fasting is known all over the world, and now I have discovered something new. And as I think the English people are very intelligent, I propose making a scientific experiment in London of speaking continually for 3 days and three nights, and neither drinking, eating, nor sleeping during that period. During this experiment, I will talk on the following subjects: theology, psychology, astronomy, and other sciences. Please insert this letter into your paper, because the public are under the erroneous impression that I am insane, and it is only just to myself that this impression should be removed, as my experience is real and the truth.
So he's trying to prove that he's not insane by speaking continuously for 3 days and three nights on theology, psychology, and all the rest of theologies.
I think you summed it up there, yes.
Okay, cool. I mean, that I would go and watch.
It's kind of hiding in plain sight, isn't it? So, yeah, 1892, not Giovanni's best year. But then, because he can't keep a good man full. 1st of September, 1892, Gloucester citizen, Suchi's latest fast. The Naples correspondent of the Daily News paid a visit to Mr. Suchi on the 19th day of his fast. I found him, says the correspondent, looking well, though thin and worn, but not at all famine-stricken. I observed to Mr. Suchi that I wondered whether a working man in full work would able to be undergo such an experiment as the present. And Suchi replied, I could work. I should be strong enough. He often makes trials of strength and proves to be stronger than many of the gentlemen who watch his experiment, because, of course, he's gone a bit. His issues are exacerbated now. He told me he had made a good deal of money in England. Not true. Mm-hmm. In the middle of his fast here, he one day rode a horse twice around a considerable enclosure and a camel once.
Right.
In proof of his strength. He was like, on the fifth to last day.
I just had a vision of like this camel just dragging him around. He's like, I'm fine, guys. Totally fine.
He just thinks the camel's like a car. He has given up the idea of walking up Vesuvius. This was an idea that he had at the start of this fast. He said that he said that the second to last day of the fast, he would go and walk up Mount Vesuvius to show that he was still strong. Right. He gave up that idea when he realised that he wasn't strong enough.
What point did he realise that?
I think probably like day three when he was like, Giovanni, stop with this nonsense. Here's a clue to something. His general condition, according to the doctors, is very good. Signor Succi's elixir, of which he has taken very little during this fast, smells of laudanum.
Laudanum? Mm. What does that smell like? That doesn't give me any clues.
Lords. It smells like lords.
So now, House of Lords.
Now you're like, oh, hang on. What is being alluded to with this laudanum comment? Another report earlier that I didn't add to this, but I remembered it when I read that, and then I couldn't find the other report, but it said, the report basically said, if it isn't morphine in that bottle, it certainly acts like it. So now I'm like, why was Malatti so convinced that Succi was a fraud? Why was he so annoyed about it? So then, this is the stupidest thing Succi did.
Right, he's done some pretty stupid things so far, so this is
interesting. Bear in mind who I'm talking about, yes. Honestly, brace yourself for how stupid... Also...
Suspense!
So, Succi burst into the scene in 1886 with his magic elixir, right?
Uh-huh.
1887, he's fasting. 1888, 1889, 1890.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about this elixir. He's talking about how it can make people live forever, or, well, not eat forever. Why isn't he monetizing it? Why isn't he selling it? So here's a clue. Dover Express, 16th of September, 1892. Headline, Succi's secret draft. The Daily News wrote... This is so stupid. The Daily News Rome correspondent telegraphs, Succi, who is fasting at Naples, sent samples of his secret sustaining draft to the central hygienic offices in Rome, requesting it might be analysed and asking to be allowed to sell it. The hygienic department has, however, declared that according to Italian law, the mixture can only be sold by apothecaries upon medical prescription, as chemical analysis has proved it to contain so-called galenic substances, poisons. Of course, the department is not allowed to reveal the nature of the draft, but I am informed that morphine enters into its composition.
Okay. So...
It sounds like he's just taking morphine.
I mean...
Which I guess would make sense for hunger pains.
It would make sense for hunger pains. It would make sense why he went a little crazy in the middle there. It would... Also, it's also interesting, though, because that's still legit helping him get through the fasting. Like, I guess it kind of makes sense. But they're like, there's this magic potion. And it's like, well, there is kind of...
The equivalent of what you're suggesting is losing weight by cutting a leg off.
Well,
like,
yeah, I guess
it isn't
so.
Really a... I mean, it's like people used to take... And probably just take speed to lose weight.
Yeah.
These things are just bad for you. You shouldn't recommend them to people like you just have.
I would just like to point out, I'm not advocating the use of morphine for weight loss. But, yeah. I don't know. Like, logically, I guess.
Yesterday's Chip Paper is not a pro-morphine podcast by its nature.
There are children listening, Jim. How could you?
There aren't children listening to this. Okay, so 1893 is another quiet year. By his standards, I'm sure if I could speak Italian, I'm sure I'd find him all over Italy, up to all sorts of nonsense. July 1894, the 13th of July, in the Dundee Evening Telegraph, Succi on the fast again. Giovanni Succi, the fasting man, began on Saturday in Budapest a fast of 30 days. As before, he has resorted to his mysterious liquid, of which he pours two or three drops into a pint of water. He smokes several cigars daily, walks about, and converses freely with visitors.
Or himself, if there aren't any visitors.
I mean, he's off his chops all the time. So, that's 1894, successful 30-day fast. English newspapers, no use now for him. Until he turns up again in 1900 for another 40-day fast. And he worked all through the 1880s. The 1880s was like the zenith of this craze, going into the 1890s. And it was largely because of Succi. And then...
That's the craziest thing when someone asks you what you do.
Oh, I think he would genuinely thought he was some sort of miracle healer or something. Mm. He's very... From what I read about Suchi, it's in the newspaper, so it's all through someone else's filter, but it's... I can't work out whether he believed it or whether he... Just very convincing. Because if you think back to the story about him being found insane, he was living with two Englishmen who were presumably paying him money so that they could be apprentice Humber artists. You know,
this is true. This
is why I can't figure out whether he believes it or whether he's just a really good con man.
Well, he's not a really good con man, but he's good at convincing people. He needs to work on the business skills. But
he's a terrible con man. He actually does it and doesn't make any money. But I think probably this is quite a nice place to leave the story of Giovanni Suchi. The Aberdeen Press and Journal, and this also, the next two little articles are kind of the natural conclusion of Giovanni Suchi. Mm-hmm. The Aberdeen Press and Journal on the 1st of June 1908. Headline, Suchi finds fasting does not pay. It has been discovered, says the Paris correspondent of the Standard, that the profession of faster, if so one may call a man who gains his living by fasting, is not a paying one. Suchi, one of the most famous members of the profession, has just been compelled to seek work and has been given a post as nurse at the asylum in Nanterre, a few miles out of Paris. Suchi, although not so well paid as before, is now able to eat to the full. He will now eat, smile, talk and joke, which he would never do while fasting, as he forbade himself the slightest unnecessary movement. His favourite saying today, and with an ironic smile, is, fasting does not feed the faster. Nevertheless, he still dreams of organising a large tour to demonstrate his famous capabilities. Suchi was one of the most famous men in France about 20 years ago. He was one of the most famous men in France. And there's no Wikipedia page. About 20 years ago, the American Tanner had created a sensation of starving during 40 days. He was not long without his imitators, of whom Malatti and Suchi were the most famous. Suchi was soon left alone in the field, his rival having killed himself. Strangely enough, it was not too little but too much food that killed Malatti. He had eaten too hearty a meal after one of his long fasts, and indigestion did the rest. So, Malatti died after a fast. For several years, Suchi toured France. He hired a public building, and on the payment of a small sum, people could pass through and see him. He usually fasted during 30 or 40 days. His first tour brought him nearly £300. This was not so bad, but Suchi remembers rather disconsolately that his manager received more than four times that amount. The last tour brought
his manager. 20... Wait, what?
Yeah, I had no mention of this manager before this point. That guy was even bigger charlatan, I imagine. The last tour brought only £20 when all expenses had been paid. Suchi says that over the last 20 years, he has spent five living in nothing more than cold water with a few drops of lemon juice in it. I'm not being funny, but that wasn't lemon juice. But whatever. And then this is the report of his death, and this is just perfect how it's reported. In the Globe, Tuesday the 15th of October 1918.
Good paper.
Suchi dead. Rome, Tuesday. Giovanni Suchi, who for many years puzzled the physicians of two continents by his ability to fast for periods of 40 days, has just died at the age of 68. He passed his last years in raising fancy chickens. That is the end of Giovanni Suchi.
Oh, poor Giovanni.
I know. It sounds like he died alone as well.
What kind of chickens are we talking here? Fancy chickens?
I don't know how fancy you get really with a chicken. I guess.
Were they really thin?
Are you suggesting that he thought they were his apprentices?
Yeah.
God, it's just a farm full of heroin addicted chickens.
Imagine how much fun that would be.
Train scocking.
Ah.
So that is the story of. That is part of the story of Giovanni Suchi. That's the story that I can tell based on the
that's
newspapers.
That's crazy.
I just
one of the most famous men in France, and the British Library don't know who he is.
I'm thinking that I might start the Wikipedia page for this guy.
Yeah, do it.
Because it just seems nuts to me that what a life.
Yeah.
What a massive liar. As well.
Well, I don't know. Like as soon as you mentioned the manager, I was like, I wonder if he was actually nuts, Like,
well, someone's got to book the Royal Aquarium and things.
Yeah.
Do you know what wouldn't surprise me is if the manager was Jacques' manager as well. That's why they're being booked in the same place and doing
they're being pitted against each other.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise
me. He's probably rolling in it.
And in fact, if that'd be the person where you say what you do for a living and you're like, kind of look away. You're like, I stop people eating.
Talent manager.
Yeah. If you see some really skinny guys around, they're my boys. but yeah, so if anybody managed to get to the end of that with me and knows any more about Giovanni Succi or knows things that I've said that were incorrect or anything, please, please do get in touch because I'm really fascinated by this guy. We're on Twitter at Paper Podcast and we're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/paperpodcast. We'd be really interested to hear from you. So the other thing that we like doing on Yesterday's Chip Paper, when we're not reading about the gallivanting con men of the hunger artistry, is looking at the letters to the editor sections of old newspapers because of they're kind of an education in pettiness quite often. They're the YouTube comments of their day, but somebody actually has some proof.
Well, they're the YouTube comments, but they're also the IMDb, I found out this week, because I found this paper on newspapers.com, the Boston Post, and they had their movie editor. And every week they had these letters that people had sent in asking about the famous movie stars. This is from the 2nd of July, 1921. And there were loads and loads of these. And the first one was, Dear Mr. Screen Editor, would you please give me Anita Stewart's address? How old is she and is she single? What is her next picture? I am very much interested in her.
God, and then, the world was just waiting for the internet, wasn't it?
And they were really short little messages, but each message had like four questions in it, and then the editor would just go through answering each question. And he actually says, Anita Stewart is playing in The Price of Happiness. She can be reached at 3800 Mr. Rose, Los Angeles. And he actually gives them like exact addresses where he can write to them. And it's not like, oh, you can write to the studio or something. It's like actual street addresses. I'm really hoping that this is like managers rather than where they live.
I would assume it's agents. I'm hoping it's agents.
But, yeah, there's loads of them. There's, what is Jack Richardson's address? How old is he? How old is Eddie Polo? Is Annie Cornwall married? How old is she? Would Eddie Polo send me his photograph? That's from one guy.
I'm imagining that he just kept saying those things to himself and somebody was like, you know, if you just write those down and send them to the newspaper, they'll answer these questions.
But then there was another one that said, Dear Movie Man, I am a young girl, 12 years old. I would like to be a movie star.
Dear Movie Man, indeed. Good God. Sorry, go on.
I have sung on the stage several times and everybody thought I'd done fine. Please, will you kindly let me know something about getting in the movies? And that's I'm Marie. And he says, Marie, there is nothing that anybody can do for you.
What?
There are only a very few Jackie Coogans and Wesley Berrys in 1,000. Sorry, I cannot give you more encouragement.
God, Movie Man is real.
But the last letter from that I wanted to pull out was, Dear Sir, will you please tell me through the Boston Post the address of Tom Mix and how much he charges for a picture of himself in a cowboy's outfit. Signed, Arita.
If anybody wants a picture of me or Violet in a cowboy's outfit, not expensive, guys. Well, that's fun.
So that amused me greatly. But I did also find a poem, and it's very brief, from the Berry Free Press, which I think was from the British Newspaper Archive.
This is very close to my hometown.
Really? Do you have an uncle named Jeff?
It's hard to say.
Maybe. Okay, so this is another recurring segment from a paper. This is from the 13th of February, 1937. And it was called Uncle Jeff's Corner.
How old do you think I am that you're like, Uncle Jeff?
I really think of the logic by that. So this was a feature that appeared in a lot of papers that was some guy who wrote to children, and it was kind of like the kids section of the newspaper, and then like the guy would write some advice and then they'd feature letters from kids. And I found a lot of funny letters from kids, but we've had a few letters from kids, and I was like, I mean, none of them really stand out. And it was actually the letter from Jeff that stood out in this one, because he said, "Hello, children. What do you think I've been up to? You don't know? Well, I'll give you three guesses. One, no, you are wrong. Two, no, that's not right. Three, there, I knew you'd never guess. Well, I'd better tell you. I've been rewriting some of the nursery rhymes I learnt when I was a lad."
I guessed that.
"Did you say whatever made me do it? I'm afraid no. I don't know. I just had a spare moment and, well, people do all sorts of things in spare moments, don't they?"
Why are you making him have this voice?
This is what I imagine he sounds like. I don't know. I wonder if you would like to hear one or two of them. Here it goes, then.
But if this is the song from the Child Snatcher in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang,
you won't be surprised.
Colour me unsurprised, Jeffrey.
"What shall we call them? New rhymes for old? That doesn't sound too bad, does it? Well, here's the first one." And honestly, the first one is the only one you need to hear.
Okay.
It goes, "Three blind mice, see how they run. Their little noses have smelt some cheese. They nibble it up with such perfect ease. When snap goes the trap, the next it will squeeze on three blind mice." And that's it. Yeah,
that doesn't improve that at all. And also that nursery rhyme
just makes it a little more sinister.
No, but it's about three bishops that either Mary or Elizabeth killed.
Yeah, no, I mean, all of that metaphor is out of the window with this one.
So he hasn't made it more sinister, he's made it more overt.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was what Uncle Jeff gets up to in his spare time.
I can't think of any other nursery rhymes that I'd like him to rewrite. Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet and a spider ate her. Yeah. That was his... A, he was being paid for that. I don't see anything better in what he's doing than what Suchi was doing. And B, probably two or three was probably fine, because you know for a fact that it's like a Sunday morning, the parents are at the table and they're eating the breakfast and the kid's like, "Oh, Dad, can I have the kids page?" And Dad's like, "Yeah, here goes the kids page." And the kid's like, "Oh, guess what Jeff's done?" And the dad's like, "Oh, it's Jeff again, is it? What's he done?" And the kid's like, "He's ruined 47 nursery rhymes. Do you want to hear them?" And the dad's like, I really don't.
And the kid's like, "Three blind mice."
And he's like, "Oh, gosh." And the kid's like, Dad, what's that word?" And the dad's like, "Oh, my gosh. You're an accident. That's what it is.
That word is squeeze."
That word is orphanage. But yeah, well, they were fun little snippets. I enjoyed those. And sincerely, if you have any information about Giovanni Suchi, and I do mean the professional faster and not the Italian musician who ruined a lot of my search results in the last couple of days, with his experimental electronic stuff. I didn't listen to him, but I imagine he's sitting in his house now just like, "Man, my ears are burning." Someone's talked about me for like an hour. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to yesterday's Chip Paper. If you have chance, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps with all of the fancy algorithms that we don't understand. Gets us more listeners, so we really appreciate it.
Playing us out is Al Jolson and Sophie Taylor with the International Rag, thanks to the Free Music Archive.
Thank you, Free Music Archive. We will list all of the archives that we use in the recording of this program in the show notes, and we will put up on Facebook and Twitter the illustration I found of the face of, well, the illustration of Giovanni Succi's moustache and then incidental face. So yeah, thank you very much, and goodbye.
Bye.